And I'm going to start by just offering kind of an overview, a review of the last 4 weeks. And that's in part because I see at least one or two names that I don't recognize from earlier in the week, early in the course, I should say. And to name that tonight is that review, and then it's diving more deeply into mindfulness of thinking, which we've kind of been covering since the very first time. So we may end a little bit early tonight, not to overwhelm you with too much information. And we'll see how it goes. We'll see what the engagement is like in that. So, as most of you know, maybe all of you know, this is the fourth of a 4 week series. It's the last topic in the 4 week series, which is mindfulness thinking. And it builds on the other weeks. So it's kind of like concentric rings or a ripple that you can see in water. Mindfulness of breath is the center ring. Mindfulness of the breath is sort of the core in this tradition. Breath doesn't work for you, you can pick another sense, but it's the core. And then the next one out is mindfulness of your body. Next one out from that is mindfulness of emotions, and then mindfulness of thinking. So they're all interlinked, and each one builds on the one before it. It makes it a lot easier to notice thinking if you can notice emotion. It makes it a lot easier to notice emotion if you can tune into your body. And it's a lot easier to tune into your body for most people, not all people, if you know how to directly attune to your breath. So, what is mindfulness meditation? It's a very basic question. I'd like to propose that it is intimacy with our lives, intimacy with direct experience, not thinking about direct experience, not visualizing, not going into a trance or using a mantra. All of those are valid forms of contemplation. But mindfulness meditation is watching or observing with awareness what's happening. It's kind of like studying our body and mind the way a naturalist studies an ecology. It cultivates the capacity for choice, response, or even no response rather than reactivity, reacting out of a need or an impulse. And at its core, I've talked about this a little bit in other talks and in this series. There's kind of an internal posture. I'm introducing that term for the first time, but an attitude about what we're experiencing that can inform everything. So that attitude is something you'll start noticing more as we explore mindfulness of thinking more. And it can shift everything. It can shift an experience from boredom or fear to interest or wonder. It's the frame of mind with which we meet reality. So, as I mentioned, we started with breath, often the preferred object, always present, dynamic, changing. It helps to build concentration, settledness, ease, usually. Is there anyone here for whom the breath does not work? You guys okay with it? If you find noticing your breath is harder and makes you more anxious, it's a really beautiful thing to do to focus instead on either your whole body or on sound. And then in terms of the body, to notice that the body has an intelligence. I used an analogy or a simile earlier that if our thinking is like a television screen in our head, Our body is like moving out of the TV room into the whole house. There's a lot more space there, and there's a lot more processing power there too. Sensations are the language of our bodies. So learning to listen to, interpret the sensations of the body. And we've talked about how pain is one kind of message. The experience of pain, I've talked about in two different nights here, increases or decreases based on how we think about it, what we think about it, how much we're judging it. So, aversion, complaint, resistance tends to increase pain. Accepting, allowing, backing off tends to decrease pain. In all of this, mindfulness meditation increases the capacity for each one of us to experience our bodies directly, rather than with the kind of judgment and commentary that so often increases physical or mental pain for that matter. And then emotions. As I was just saying, the way we think about emotions increases or decreases the intensity of them often, and how problematic we experience them. Emotions are always experienced in the body. And if they're seen early, we have some choice. An emotion doesn't have to escalate to be a problem. Without interference, an emotion tends to last for about 90 seconds. And if we think about it, react to it, we've hit the pump again and it lasts longer, which can be good if you want it to last longer, but not all of them are so pleasant, right? So they for the purpose of tonight, I guess the most important thing to note or to remind us all of is that emotions fuel thinking and thinking fuels emotions. It's a two-way process. And if I have a thought about the emotion or a thought relieving the emotion, man, that can turbocharge it or blow it all out of, just blow it up to a whole nother level. So that brings us to this evening's topic, thinking, or a little bit of a dive into thinking, which, as I mentioned, we have kind of covered it every class a little bit because of the questions in the room. But this time, I'm going to kind of dive into it a little bit more. Before I do that, are there any questions about what I've said so far or questions about your practice from last week that you want to ask? I'm just so brilliantly clear that there's no doubt. Okay. So, I think for me, what the most inspiring thing about mindfulness of thinking is that it touches every part of our life. Right? Mindfulness in general can touch every part of our life. There's a ripple effect. But and once we start to include thinking, thought, it really does include all of our experience pretty much. There's mindfulness of mind, which I'll talk about in an intermediate course at some point. But starting to bring the way we think into conscious awareness is so powerful. Many people go through their entire lives never realizing that they're not their thoughts and that one does not have to believe every thought, that reality is not my train of thought. That beginning of observing thinking as a process is the beginning of having choice about how we relate to life. So, in mindfulness meditation, unlike in concentration practices or in mantras, even in some visualizations, we're not trying to get rid of our thoughts or push them away or temporarily tamp them down necessarily. We want them to calm down enough to see them and to not react to them. For the purpose of mindfulness meditation, there's no right or wrong thought. There's no right or wrong way of thinking. It's all equally valid to be seen, observed, and held in awareness. Thoughts can be in the foreground, totally have a hooked, right? Or they can be really subtle in the background. Like I could tell, a couple of you saw me checking, responding to an email before class. I got an email from a board member, and I could tell that it was going to be niggling at me the entire class in the back of my mind if I didn't just read what she wrote and respond quickly. So it was a way of honoring the background thought and saying, okay, I'm just going to like discharge that. The fact that I could see that gave me a choice as to what I was going to do in that moment. Some people have trouble seeing their thoughts, and that's normal too. Especially if you've been living your whole life inside your thoughts, it can be hard to see them. And on the other hand, if you've done a lot of concentration practice or visualization practice, it can also be hard to see thoughts because the thoughts, they're kind of shy, and they tend to come up when we're not looking for them, at them. Sometimes, especially if we have a lot of practice in looking elsewhere. If you do find yourself able to see thoughts, observe thoughts, it's helpful sometimes to categorize them. I think of this as actually sort of like a species of thoughts, if you will. There's the planning species. The remembering or reminiscing or regretting are all species. Fantasizing, very rich, full species. And when I say fantasizing, it's not necessarily always good stuff, right? It can be fantasizing about a tree falling on my car, right? Who knows? Or it could be about that wonderful meal I'm going to have with my friend in 2 days. None of this is wrong. All of our minds do it. Mindfulness meditation asks us to notice that it's happening rather than simply be swept along inside of it. And that offers choice. It's paying attention to the difference between process and content. So, process, for example, does anybody here think in pictures? Yeah, all of us. Okay. You may find you have movies in your head sometimes, with sound even, of memories or of planning conversations, or I should have said that, or I could have done this. Sometimes there'll be these entire little scenes, almost like a television set that unfolds inside. And I might wake up 10, 15 minutes later. Oh, wait, that conversation's actually not happening. I'm sitting in my room, supposedly meditating, right? So, one way that's really helpful not to get lost in the content is to start to notice. Is it internal hearing? Words? Is it images? Is it idea concepts that have none of those qualities? But to start to notice the process, the actual unfolding of the thought itself in the moment. Finally, if on the other hand, your thinking isn't shy, but it's overwhelming, which for many of us it can be, especially if it's anxiety fueled, it can be helpful to sort of do an internal turn and look directly at the thinking. My teacher says, look thinking directly in the eye. If you're looking at it as thinking, it's less likely to be in control. So, with that, the invitation is to start a meditation. So finding a posture that's a balance between relaxation and alertness. And for the purpose of tonight, in part because of the soft, soothing rain, and in part because thinking tends to be what's called a subtle object of attention, it's not always as easy to see. I'm going to ask you to focus a little bit more on alertness. That means letting your spine be straighter than usual. Maybe letting your chest open up just a little bit, and then balancing over your hip points. Noticing the dignity of sitting up straight, the integrity in your spinal column. And then allowing your body's muscles to soften around this upright core, relaxing the body around the bones. Taking a moment to notice the whole body. Maybe the sounds of the rain, if you can hear it. And taking one or two slower, deeper breaths. Relaxing in the exhale. And then tuning in, attuning to the sensations of your body breathing, really attending to it. Noticing the details of breathing in the middle of the in-breath, the top of the in-breath. A little pause before exhaling. And noticing all of the little sensations in the exhale. Perhaps as the exhale completes, noticing a little pause there too, softening into it. Allowing the rhythm of the in-breath and the out-breath to be in the forefront of your attention. Letting everything else fade to the background for now. And dedicating yourself softly, quietly, to each breath. Letting yourself ride on the waves. Breathing in and breathing out. Thank If it's helpful, you can be connecting to do a soft internal note or label. In breath, out breath. Or if the attention is more with the belly, rising and falling, the belly rising and falling. Settling in. Settling in with the body breathing. If another sense contact, sound, sensation, thought arises, flexing the muscle of attention to return to focus on feelings of breathing, sensations of breathing. Resting. Settling your body into the moment. As you're breathing, if a thought arises, instead of inviting it to the background, notice the thought. Is it an image or an internal sound? Is it remembering or planning, past or future? Is it imagining or fantasizing? Just notice, no judgment needed. The invitation is to notice with the next thought any emotion that might be arising. If there's emotion, turning the attention then to the emotion. Noticing the sensations in the body. And if and when the thought fades, changes, becomes less interesting, returning to breathing. Strengthening the muscle of attention. Notice another thought. Again, noticing the process. And if, as so often happens, the thought dissolves or fades, enjoy the awareness, the simplicity of being aware without the thought before returning to breathing. If a thought feels strong or compelling, and you're caught inside of thinking, it can be helpful to notice, invite into awareness any emotion underneath. And if it isn't strong and emotion fueled, appreciating that. And choosing again and again To return to the body breathing. Noticing if it does occur that sometimes there's a little pop or start of recognition when
lots of feelings, lots of thoughts, very thoughts
inside a thought. There's a recognition that occurs sometimes. Oh, thinking. It can be a little bit of brightness. A little bit of a startle almost when returning to the moment, appreciating that that little pop, that little shift is a moment of awareness. Great. I was thinking. And again, returning to the body and breathing. Thank you for your practice. So as you return to perhaps a less meditatively focused awareness, a few thoughts about thoughts for you. One is, you're still kind of in that meditative space, so I want to invite you to visualize for a moment. Kind of eyes open or eyes closed. And that is, visualize that it's a day off after a busy week, and you're able to go to a park, beautiful park. Gorgeous day. And go to a bank of a river. And you don't have your devices with you, you don't have anywhere to go, anything to do, and it just feels so good to lie down and relax under the shade of a tree at the side of the river and watch the river go by. So pleasant. And then before too long, a boat goes by. And it is a showboat. It's a party boat. It's got streamers and music and there's dancing and it's like fancy and lights and the whole thing. You're looking at it. And before you know it, you're on the boat. And it's fun for a little while. And then it starts to get kind of enervating, kind of too much. And you realize that a day has gone by, or maybe 2 days have gone by. And without even meaning to, you've been on this boat and you're nowhere close to the riverbank. So you hop off the boat and somehow get yourself back to the riverbank. This is a visualization, so you can pop back there right away. And you notice how much more peaceful it feels to be in the grass, under the tree, watching the river go by. Another boat goes by, and this is a warship, bristling with guns and artillery, menacing. You know what's going to happen if you get on that boat, right? Not very much fun. And then you manage to somehow have the strength to stay at the riverbank. You don't get on the riverboat. But following it, not that long after, is a love boat. Romantic music. All kinds of sensual fantasies. If you get on that boat, you might be gone for a couple weeks, right? And then somehow managing to stay there, grounded on the bank of the river. The last boat you see go by is this decrepit little raft. It's barely held together by twine. Just kind of limping along through the water. And that's the poor me boat. So that's it for the visualization, except to say that you can stay on the riverbank. As you may have surmised by now, the riverbank signifies the perspective of lucid awareness, of mindfulness. The river is the flow of our thinking. And these boats take us places if we get on them, right? We have a choice. And almost always in meditation, it is more relaxing to be on the riverbank, grounded, rooted in mindfulness, than it is to hop on the boat and go for a ride, especially when we don't even know we're getting on, right? Releasing that if you haven't already. Let's see, I'm really curious. Did anyone notice thinking during that meditation? And if you did, what did you notice about it? Yes, Mina.
Hi, Don. Can you hear me?
Hear you great. Nice to see you. Yes.
Nice to see you. So first of all, I want to say thank you for a beautiful guided imagery. It really helps because I'm returning and my mind is super restless these days. So I'm really grateful for guided imagery, and your soft voice is helping me to anchor with myself and not running away. And so it encourages me that I can get back into practice and learn to live more peaceful life.
Great.
So just really grateful for that. And I want to make a comment. When I was sitting on the riverbank and seeing all those boats coming by and listening to your gentle voice, I really was surprised to see in me that I was not interested to jump in on any of those boats, even the love boat, which usually would be my tendency. In this space, I didn't want to. I was very happy being on the riverbank, and I had an inclination when I saw a raft. Actually, a raft to me appeared to be better than all the other boats because it was simple. It had no music of any kind, and I knew I can be on that raft in the simplicity of being, and that's what appeared to me. So I was saying, if I had to make a choice, that would be my choice.
And I love what you just did, the simplicity, because the raft is also an analogy. It doesn't have to be a for me raft. I'm guessing you didn't want to be on a for me raft.
Oh, but whatever, raft, I just like the idea
right.
that there was not going to be many emotions on that raft.
Mm-hmm.
And because I was in such a calm space, I didn't want to even experience happy emotions, which would be associated with love boat.
Exactly, exactly. So that's one of the developments that can happen as mindfulness gets stronger, is the peacefulness of observing, the peacefulness of being grounded in the moment feels better than any other experience running through our minds. So beautiful. Thank you for sharing that.
Thank you.
Anybody else? And either in the visualization or in the 20-minute meditation that preceded it, did anyone see a thought? Or did thoughts? Yeah, David, hi.
Yeah, I feel very relaxed, and I'm not jumping onto any boat. I just seeing myself as sitting there and watching it passing by without getting on any boat.
Nice. Even before the boat visualization, you're saying you're using that as a metaphor for the meditation as well?
Yeah, I think the meditation is to just to sit there and to watch things passing by without involving and getting on it. When you get on it, seems like you involve and it will drift away from where you supposed to be.
Yeah, exactly. Wonderful. Mm-hmm. Happy you had that experience. Did anyone find it challenging? A lot of people do. So just want to make space for that. If you did and you don't feel like sharing, that it's really normal. Many of us, as we start to learn mindfulness of thinking, and to this day, sometimes it still happens to me, and I've been doing this practice for many years. It can, if a thought is what's called sticky in our scene, it can pull you right into it, like gravitational field. So certain thoughts have more pull, more gravity, if you will, than others. So just to acknowledge that, right? And if one has a lot more pull, it can be helpful to really intentionally be firm and rooted. Like, okay, you're here. I know that. Back to the body, back to the breath. At that point, it's not as useful to try to notice the subtle characteristics of a thought, but it's more like, All right, you're over there. I'm over here. And let it do its thing while you're grounded at the riverbank. Certain things fuel our thinking. I talked a little bit about emotion before and how emotion fuels our thinking. Physical sensations can also be a fuel, especially really pleasant or really unpleasant. It's super common for the really pleasant sensations for thoughts of more to come up, or, oh, this is so right. Like, oh, finally, right? Unpleasant. My MO for many years with unpleasant thoughts was, or unpleasant sensations was to put the attention somewhere else. The attention would just fly off. And then at a certain point, for many of us, if it's a longer term pain, the thought can get sucked into the pain, as I've talked about before. So to notice that and the move to make, again, we can use the raft analogy from last week. The recognize, acknowledge, feel, tease apart, or move to the next most, the thing that's supporting the thought. So if it's an emotion-fueled thought, move to the emotion. If it's a sensation-fueled thought, to notice the sensations too. That will usually undercut the more powerful looping thoughts or the more overwhelming thoughts. The number one thing, though, that fuels thinking is self-identification. So imagine walking with a friend, right? And this friend will not stop talking. It's happened to all of us at one point in our lives, right? They just won't stop talking. And at a certain point, you start to get kind of concerned about your friend because not only are they talking, they're repeating themselves constantly. And almost everything they're talking about is them. That's how our minds work most of the time, right? The most common central character in all of our thinking, who is that? Moi, right? Or if it's not, it's something that impacts my perception of myself. So, oh, that person's so amazing. And if I were with them, then I would be like this, or my life would be like that. So even that kind of thinking, often it's self-identification at the core. We'll do one more little short guided meditation here. But before I do, any questions about what I was just saying? Questions, complaints, observations, insights? Yeah, maybe. And then Mila, after Mila.
I just want to share that when I first started meditating, distractions came up. And because I've been trained as a prison guard, you always, whenever you leave the house, you're in yellow. You're always, you know, concerned about your surroundings. And so when I first started volunteering and being a greeter, I would always sit in the back so I could observe everything, watch the door and stuff. And this time when we were doing it, I heard the door open. I heard some people come in. And my first thought was, do they have a weapon? Are they going to try to hurt us? Are they going to do all that stuff? And I opened my eyes, looked at you, you look calm. So I was like, okay, must be good. Close my eyes and went back into them. So that's progress for me.
Great.
And to be aware of it and notice it, but then to let it go.
Yeah.
It was really very out of character for me, but it's good.
Yes.
I'm progressing.
That's fantastic. I mean, that's really strong mindfulness too, right? Because you notice the thought, you notice the threat response and the, oh, what if? Noticing, I imagine, do you remember what the impact was on your body in that moment?
Well, when they first came in, I was, you know, immediately alerted.
Right, heightened alert.
And then I heard him sit behind me and I was like, if they try to strangle me, I'm going to do something. But then
they seem like lovely people. quite harmless.
They must be pretty nice people because Don hasn't, you know, given me a signal or anything. So I'm just gonna go with it and relax. And if they shoot me in the back of the head, you know, then there's meant to be. But we're all still here, so it's okay.
So the fantasy unfolding. So that's progress too. And to see, like, we're being a little bit playful with it. I hope you folks are okay with that. This is so human, right? We're conditioned to something, whether it's fear or desire or sadness, as a reaction to you don't even know what, right? Like, and to be able to see the cascade of just heard something, recognized that it was humans, and then saw my mind do this thing, this like flip out thing that it's gotten used to doing. That's so human. And it's so powerful to be able to see it before whipping your head around or hopping out of the seat or doing whatever the reaction is. So thank you. Thank you for the anecdote. Mila, yes.
You know, I really appreciate you talking about the self-identification. I feel like a lot of my frustrations in life, because in the work that I do, being a care manager, a nurse for very, very ill people, I often stand up for them like a mama bear. Mm-hmm. And because their lives often are in my hands. I mean, if I don't advocate, things can go really badly. So I catch myself day to day getting so emotional. And when you said self-identification, I feel like this is what's happening with me. I almost like feel like when somebody neglects my client, they're neglecting me at the same time. And it's a really hard space and to be in. And I was just in that space yesterday. And then I felt absolutely terrible about how the conversation went because I'm super aware what's happening with me. I just often feel like I have no control and a like runaway train of my emotions and self-identification. So you just named it. And now I understand why I get so emotional. So if you have any, if you can recommend me outside of what I'm already coming back to meditation practice, anything else that you would recommend to do day to day?
I'll try to do a short form answer to this. And then I also just want to invite you to get in touch for a practice discussion if you want to through the website. And part of the reason I'm saying that in full transparency is that there are issues unique to professional caregivers that are too complicated to really unpack in a group class so easily. So the self-identification piece is huge, and to acknowledge part of what's happening there is a compassionate impulse. There's fierce compassion happening there, the wish to protect, right? And then there's the second arrow, the next layer, which is the self-identification and getting, like, I'm the one being neglected because my people are being maltreated. So to start to look at the difference in how it feels in your body and your mind when it is coming from a place of compassion for others or yourself versus coming from a place of feeling impinged upon. And I want to be clear, it is okay sometimes and necessary to feel impinged upon if we need to have a boundary. However, many of our minds tend to blow that up a little bit more than it needs to be blown up. So just notice for yourself what's true for you. And then when an emotion is running away like that, if you can move to your body, and stay with your body. And it might mean moving your body if it's really strong. Going for a little 5-minute walk, very brisk walk, can do wonders, especially if you're mindful when you're doing it. And let the emotion move through. Emotions are physical, they're chemical, hormonal. So in a way, it just kind of has to clear before the mind and heart can get settled again if it's gotten that amped up. So I hope those are helpful. It's just a little tip.
Very helpful. I appreciate that. I'm on the right track, at least. That's a good thing with many things that I'm doing now.
You're on the right track.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
You're welcome. And bows to what you're working with. That's not easy practice. It really isn't core to our humanity, really. So, speaking of core, I just said it's even more complicated to cough with technology. So, speaking of core, I want to invite you, you don't have to shift position, but just to tune into your body's core again. Tune in. Notice your breath for a moment or two. Notice your body and your breathing. Now I want to drop in a little contemplation question. What would I be experiencing right now if I were not thinking? Any answers to that question emerge for you? What did you notice? The mic is coming. Hang on one second.
Oh, Zoom people.
The Zoom folks want to hear you too.
I'm not sure if it's good or bad because I immediately thought about not thinking. Kind of a trap, but so I thought if I wasn't thinking, I would just be more relaxed and kind of a deeper state of calm and peace.
Yeah,
that's about it, really.
Sounds great. More relaxed, deeper state of calm and peace.
But that was a thought.
Some thoughts are skillful thoughts. Anybody else? It doesn't have to be a thought. It can be just an experience, a moment.
I immediately saw my attention shift to music.
And how did that feel? Pleasant, unpleasant?
Pleasant. And then my hands were very warm.
Yeah, so you tuned right into your body, the hearing, the pleasantness of the music, the warmth of your hands, which is almost always a good sign of the parasympathetic nervous system being calm. And then the hunger, because your body's saying, hey, what about me? Yeah. Yeah, thank you. Anybody else notice anything? There's no right or wrong answer to this question. There's many responses. I can tell you what I first noticed. So I did something that I do not recommend any of you do. I did a 2 or 3 day silent self-retreat with a friend before I had a practice going. I just dove right in. What I noticed was anxiety. A lot of it. So just to say that it can be calming, peaceful, it can be connecting to the moment. For a lot of people, if there's a lot of thinking, it could be blocking an emotion that could benefit from being attended to. So there's no one right or wrong answer. Often, it connects us more to the moment and to peacefulness and relaxation. And you're not doing it wrong if it's connecting you to something else. Either one is okay. The instruction then is still the same, to turn the attention as kindly as you can towards what's arising and give it some space to move through. Then move back to the breath or whatever your anchor of attention is. So, I want to offer resources for continuing this practice of mindfulness in general and mindfulness of thinking in particular. One of the resources, well, both of them are actually stacked on that little table as you walk into the foyer. One of them is the handouts from this week and last week, which are printed out there without my yellow highlighter on them. And all of them for all 4 weeks are available on the Dharma Seed link on the ISC website, and including tonight's recording of all the talks. Tonight will be uploaded tomorrow. This has a great little, each handout has a great little synopsis of what we covered. And on the back side, what I'm going to be talking about right now, which is optional homework. So if you choose to continue exploring this realm of mindfulness of thinking, which I really encourage, this unlocks the key to so much of how we relate to life and practice. It's really helpful to meditate a little longer. This class has been asking people to meditate at least 20 minutes a day. The recommendation is to extend it to 30. Many of us need more time to settle into this level of mindfulness. And then the next one is to spend some time through your day reflecting on assumptions or attitudes or beliefs that you have about your own thoughts, whatever they are. You might not notice them at first, but it's helpful to notice your attitude about the thinking. Right? A lot of meditators think thinking is the enemy, especially when you're meditating. And it doesn't have to be. For the purpose of mindfulness meditation, any thought is as good as any other thought, and thinking is as good as silence. It's possible to begin to learn to disengage. It's a certain kind of freedom when we start to attend to the awareness of what's happening rather than only what's happening. That awareness in itself has some of that peace and ease and distance, if you will. You're not sucked inside the TV set, you're maybe in the living room and it's on the other side of the house. And then to spend one period of time, an hour or two, tracking the kinds of things you think about. This is a humbling exercise, friends. Number one clue, I bet you it's a lot about you, because mine are a lot about me. And they often fall into patterns. Like for some people, planning is a big thing. For other people, remembering. For some people, it's fantasizing. And just to start to notice how much there's repeats. Noticing this helps the process of disengaging from having to believe in it as much. Noticing the awareness. So, mindfulness of thinking is the fourth sort of level, the fourth concentric ring of mindful awareness. And in this kind of introductory course, this more basic course, it's the last rung. There's a lot more. Our attitudes about thinking, the general atmosphere of mind, ways of relating to the practice that I'll go into in future courses. But for now, the most valuable thing anyone here can do is to continue to practice. You can listen to these recordings again if you want, check out the handouts. The second resource is a stack of books by my mentor, Gil Fronstall. Those are Dhammadana books, they're free. And there's essays on emotions and thinking in those books that are very good. So if you want to take one, you can also explore that and just see. So, as we're wrapping up, any last questions or comments about mindfulness of thinking, your own experience with it, your experience through the classes? Mostly want to encourage you to just keep practicing. It's a beautiful thing you're doing. It's a beautiful thing. So thank you for your kind attention. And Susan is asking, will there be more classes? I haven't found time in my schedule to schedule an intermediate class yet, but I will. And another class that's a good follow-on to this one that'll be happening, I think it's in May, it's in spring sometime, is I'll be offering an introduction to metta, to loving-kindness, friendliness course. And I strongly recommend anyone who does that course have done this first or something like it. It doesn't have to be from me. It's a lot easier to practice that meditation fruitfully if you have a basic grounding in the mindfulness. And there's other courses that'll be listed on the website. This is kind of the foundation for all of them. So just look, we've got some stuff coming up in January. We're doing a Buddhism in a Nutshell series starting the second Saturday in January that goes for 4 or 5 months. And that is a half day every Saturday. I think it's 9:30 a.m. to 12 p.m. So that's your introduction. It's a Four Noble Truths class, but it's a really experiential introduction. So I hope that's helpful. As I said before, you can find class notes. If you go to the resources tab, sorry, I didn't give you enough specifics, resources tab on the insightsantacruz.org website, it says talks, Dharma talks and articles. You click on that, and the very top link in that page is a link to the recorded Dharma talks. You click on that, and it will take you to another web page that has a category for talks, and then mine should be pretty close to the top. So, thank you all for your practice. Thanks for your participation. If you came a little or come a lot. And I'm not going to take other questions right now, other than to say that Insight Santa Cruz is an Insight Meditation Center. And Insight Meditation is one branch of Buddhism. It's a liberal branch of Theravada. And all Insight Meditation Centers are linked by that general thing. So the strongest link I have is not with San Jose or Watsonville, but with Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City. The other, Watsonville was started by a practitioner that was here. She's no longer with us, but it was picked up by another practitioner that's here. So they related informally, right? So, thank you all for your questions. Thank you for your attention. And to mention that this is a completely volunteer-based, dana, donation-based center. And we are in the middle of our annual fund drive. So if you are interested in contributing, I encourage you to contribute. I don't know if anyone wants to say anything more about that who's on the call.
Yeah, we have two Donna baskets in the back, Donna donations, one for the center and one for the individual teachers. And if you can't give monetarily, then like I do, I volunteer. I try to do as many classes as I can. It not only reinforces my practice, but helps me to help others to do the same. It's a great way to get Donna.
Thanks, Manny. And your practice is also your Donna to yourself and to the world. So trust that. I'm going to dedicate the benefit of our time here together to greater peace, ease, freedom, and awareness in our lives and in the lives of everyone we touch directly and indirectly. May all beings be free of suffering. May all beings know the highest joy of awakening.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.